Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the DC Sports Brain Trust. My name is Varun. I'm your host and moderator, joined as always by three of my good friends and the best damn sports analysts around, Chris, Nick, and Rahul. Gentlemen, how you guys doing?
Yo, got a special guest.
Yes, we do. I was about to introduce him. I was waiting for you all to say something.
Yeah, you just cut him off like that, Nick? That was going to be Varun's grand reveal, and you just...
Yeah.
Shot it in the butt.
Just wakes up from a nap and then just cuts Varun's intro.
Completely ruins my momentum.
Varun's been thinking about this intro all day and you just cut him at the knees.
Bro, all day I was dreaming about this intro. Anyway.
About just a long blank, nothing. Only for you to just... Eh, whatever, go ahead.
Anyway. Our second DC Sports Brain Trust episode to have a guest. We have a guest with us tonight, ladies and gentlemen, our good friend Stevie. What's going on, my guy?
Hey, doing good. Thanks for having me, guys.
Welcome to the show.
Yeah, just throwing it out there. I've been listening to every episode so far. you guys make me smile sometimes with, like, the Rahul Red Pandas movement. And then I actually do agree with Varun on Michael A. Taylor as the unsung hero.
Oh, no. Get him out of here. All right. Get him off the podcast. Legend. Get him off the podcast. I'm done with him.
All right. But yes, thanks for having me, guys.
No problem, Stevie. Glad you're able to see the light about Michael A. Taylor.
Oh, God.
But today we're going to start things a little bit differently. We are going to get on the ice and dive into some hockey.
Wait, we're diving into the ice?
I said get on the ice and dive into some hockey. Goodness, Chris. Anyway, the Caps had a decisive victory against the Boston Bruins yesterday. We saw goals from both TJ Oshie and Tom Wilson. Holpe was playing like Stanley Cup Holpe, just out of his mind. And also
knock
we saw...
on wood.
Knock on wood. Knock on wood, knock on steel, knock on metal, knock on plastic, whatever you want to knock on. And we also saw that the Caps on Twitter, they poked a little fun at David Pastrnak of the Bruins about Tom Wilson being the best goal scorer in the league. So basically good stuff from the Caps so far in terms of at least going up against the Bruins. Had a bit of a shaky start initially, but it seems like their momentum's starting to come to them. Perhaps we're going to get pretty good first round out of them. But Stevie, since you're the guest, I want to start with you. What do you think about the Caps?
Well, the Caps, they look good in the last game. And also, they look decent in the first game against the Lightning. It's like, I do think those three games are three of the best teams in the league. So I guess it's good that they got the 3 points and they're the third seed, because I'd rather them play against the Islanders versus the Hurricanes, who look really hot right now. So I think they play decent.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, the Hurricanes, I'm afraid of the Hurricanes right now. I think they're going to end up beating the Bruins, because the Bruins look pretty terrible in all three games. Flyers are just on fire, so hopefully they cool down by the time the Caps have to face off with them. But other than that, first two games, not that great, I think. Lightning was okay. Even the last game, like, there was a lot of improvements they still got to make, namely the penalties they're racking up. Subpar. But that Tom Wilson goal was beautiful.
It was dirty. And I'm glad that we were able to handle their third loss in a row. The Bruins, as you mentioned, Chris, they just look really bad. And that TJ Oshie goal and those Tom Wilson goals were beautiful to watch, but I really like to see Holpe playing like playoff Holpe and just like playing amazing in that save. And that one goal that he let through, that was kind of a gaffe. Like, I just like let it go. It was like he was playing good that whole game, so it didn't really matter that much. And that whole thing about the Caps Twitter, Bruins, David Pastrnak, his tweet. Was where he bet with Tom Wilson and he lost that bet, so he had to say in Twitter that, in my opinion, Tom Wilson's the best goal scorer in the league, which is a truth, one of the truths out there. But yeah, the Caps Twitter just retweeted it.
Yeah. Well, apparently it was all in good fun between the two guys. And for the most part, I don't have a lot of animosity against the Bruins. So I think they're a pretty solidly run organization.
It's definitely against the Penguins, which got bounced out as we missed last.
Oh yeah. And they didn't get the number one pick either.
Yep, the Rangers. Yeah.
The Rangers worst of worlds.
Rangers ended up getting it, which kind of sucks, but hey, I'd rather the Rangers get it than the Penguins, because the Rangers are going down the drain with Lundqvist, kind of.
Yeah, I can't believe he's still playing.
Yeah, he's not going to be a Ranger next year. That's pretty much guaranteed.
Nick, what about you? You've been quiet. Tell us about your thoughts on the games.
Well, I missed the Bruins game. I was kind of off the grid over the weekend, but you know, I'm glad to hear that Holtby is playing like a beast again. I think that's probably the biggest takeaway from this entire three-game round robin. We need Holtby badly. You know, John Carlson is still questionable with an injury, and they're hoping he's going to play the first game of the series, but, you know, we didn't play him at all in these round robin games, and he's still dealing with the ailment. Our defense is just not very good. We need Holtby to really step it up in these playoffs like he did 2 years ago. And my hope is that that the offense will start to pick up a little bit more. But Holtby, we need him right now.
The good news for Holtby is in his 27 regular season games against the Islanders, he's 16-6-3 with a 2.44 goals against average and a .918 save percentage. So that's some optimistic numbers. He's had a pretty solid career against the Islanders. Hopefully he can carry that over to this this playoff series.
I hope so too, especially with no Samsonov. And ultimately, like, it's a very different environment than what we are used to in hockey with no crowds and, you know, a bubble. But you know, TJ Oshie, Tom Wilson having those goals yesterday, both were really nice. Holtby's, like, wait, what'd you say was .918 save percentage against the Islanders?
In his 27 regular season games.
Yeah, that's definitely optimistic. You definitely want, I mean, personally, yeah. I would love it if it was 100%, but obviously that's impossible.
He had a .922 in the Stanley Cup run, so I don't think he's going to get much better than a .922.
Yeah, I mean,
it's kind of funny seeing that across all sports, like how one player is good against a certain team. Like that kind of exists in like the MLB, I know, and the NFL, definitely the NBA, where just like one player dominates his team and they haven't been able to stop him.
Yeah, Holtby did have a .925 in the three round robin games and a 1.98 goals against average, which is also optimistic, and that's against apparently the three best teams in the Eastern Conference. So
that's really good.
That's a good sign as well. Hopefully he can carry that into it too. But yeah,
it's really good.
Gotta minimize the penalties though. That's the big thing that they've gotta control.
Yeah, if you were, I guess, to put some stocks in players, you have guys like Michael Kempney and Braden Holtby. They're kind of on the up and up, but I mean Backstrom is, not on the up and up. What's going on there?
I don't know. He just doesn't seem himself right now. I don't know, Stevie. What do you think?
I think Backstrom would be just fine. Well, we know who he is. He's been playing for years. So I think nothing to worry about. He's the same old backy. So I wouldn't be too worried about how he did in the round robin games. It even seems like I don't know how serious the John Carlson injury is, but the fact that he wasn't just going out there, I think, you know, they might have not been taking those games 100%. So we'll actually have to see how the actual games go against Barry Trotz, which is going to be because if anybody knows weaknesses of the Caps, it's probably Barry Trotz. So that's something I'm a bit worried about. But I still think with Barry Trotz on the Islanders, I think that it's a better matchup for the Caps than the Hurricanes right now.
For Semyon Varlamov, who's the Islanders goalie, also used to be a Capital. So a lot of old friends over there.
So a question I got to ask y'all, and I got to like prepare myself to pronounce this guy's name. Oh,
God.
Whew, here we go.
Since for you.
Is Fehevadi having a noticeable impact on the team?
I mean, no.
Yeah, that's, he didn't like, really impact the scoreboard any at all, and I'll just call him Martin, which is a little easier to say. But yeah, he didn't have a noticeable impact. I'm just glad that they did get to play him in a meaningful game, and that he had some minutes. But I expect when Carlson gets back into the lineup, his minutes are going to drastically decrease, and Siegenthaler is probably even going to be playing more than Fehervari.
Well, right now, Fehervari's scratched anyways. So even then, like, he won't be playing at all.
Yeah, provided no injury.
Assuming John Carlson plays. So
it sounded like he took the place of Gudis for that last game because Gudis hadn't been playing all that hot, and he went out there and laid some pretty good hits. Yeah. You know, so I guess you like to see that. You know, he's very, very young. He hasn't played that much. And
he's 20 years old.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's
basically... He's basically like Siegenthaler age, right? Siegenthaler is what, 21? He was playing a little bit of postseason last year, but you know, this was kind of his first year as Siegenthaler, and Martin will probably be in a similar boat next year because we don't have a very good defense, and you know, we're going to be looking to bring some some young guns in there to see what they can do.
Yep. Overall, you know, we've come so far, and unfortunately, you know, COVID did knock momentum away, but like, I see it coming back. I see the fire. It's there. They do have some injuries, and you know, Holtby is getting into this rhythm again where he's looking like, you know, the elite goalie that he is. So I'm optimistic about the Caps here, and I'm excited to see them play the Islanders. Even if Barry Trotz knows the weaknesses of the Caps, I feel like that we are going to be able to still try to be able to overcome that and be able to take on the Islanders and hopefully have a good competitive series there. Plus,
I was about to mention, I think someone nobody really talks about is Todd Rudin as the coach of the Caps. Like, this might be kind of an important playoff run for him, just because last year we got bounced first round against the Hurricanes, which at the time was a big upset. So I think it's important to see how the coaching aspect of things.
Yeah, Chris, weren't you mentioning this was like a do or die to scenario?
This was Nick that mentioned that.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean,
nobody talks about Reardon. You know, he's just flying under the radar. I think it's like more of just the Caps are a great system. So, you know, you lose Barry Trotz and the team's still really good. So,
yeah, I think if they get bounced in the first round again, you got to get rid of Reardon because you can't be bounced the first round every single year with a team that's as good as the Capitals are in the regular season.
And they're getting older.
Yeah.
Well, they're going to probably have to get younger in a couple areas. It's inevitable because of the salary cap issues that they're probably going to be facing here pretty soon. And you know,
with defense, they're already looking pretty young as it is.
And they're probably going to get rid of Holtby after this year because
they're
able to pay him.
Well, especially with how well Vanacek did in that one period that he played in the scrimmage game against the Hurricanes. He looked really good that game, so... That might have just boosted their confidence in him even more.
Yeah.
So I think we're probably going to see a Samsonov and a Vanacek goalie duo anyways next year, either way.
Yeah, I think so. I think Stevie brings up a really, really good point, and I think Reardon's job is on the line in this series. I really do. I think I expect to see him get a little bit further with this team this year in the playoffs. You know, circumstances be damned. You know, you've got a team with Ovechkin that's got to win now, and if you can't be the guy to do it, they're going to have to find someone else. Maybe Gerard Gallant, the guy that got fired from the Golden Knights earlier this year. That's kind of a name that comes to mind as somebody that might be in line to take this job should
were to not be up to task.
That was also a really shocking fire, was the Golden Knights head coach getting reamed. But I hope that Reardon's inexperience doesn't come into play in this matchup against the Islanders versus Barry Trotz. And just like just talking about how Barry Trotz knows the Capitals back and forth, and there haven't been that many changes comparatively so.
Yeah.
Well, here is hoping to a very successful series against the Islanders.
What's y'all's prediction for the series?
I'd say Caps in six.
Yeah.
I'm going to say Caps in seven.
Rahul?
I'd say Caps in seven. I'd agree with Varun.
Nick?
I don't know. That's a tough one. I'm not... Ooh. I think I got to be a homie and say Caps in seven. I think it's going to be very close.
So I think
they're going to be proving me wrong. I'm not going to lie. They're going to prove me wrong a little bit if they can pull this series off. But if they do, I think they can go very far.
I think that if they get Carlson back, if they get Lars Eller back to 100%, and they can minimize their penalties, I think they'll win in five. If they can't minimize the penalties, it'll probably be six or seven.
I think Nick brought up the defense. Yeah, I think the defense is going to be key here. Of course, we won't be able to do great, but it's tough if they're just getting open shots left and right. So.
I think also Vrana has to do better in terms of like his one opportunities, because that really sucked in the past few games.
Yeah,
I was watching him get almost a clean shot and just fucking up.
He had two breakaways, solo breakaways. One against the Lightning and one against the Flyers. If he had made the one against the Lightning, they would have won that game. But he did not. So
I'm actually going to change my prediction and say this game. This is going to be I think this is going to be a five-game series. I think somebody is going to wake up, and it's going to be a very decisive victory in the series. Because I think the Caps will either wake up very quickly and they're going to put a kibosh on this whole thing, or they're not going to wake up and they're going to get smacked. I think this is going to be a short series.
So you're saying...
If the Islanders get the win, I would not be surprised, to be honest.
So, Nick, you're saying five games, no decisive winner at the moment?
Yeah, pretty much. Somebody's about to wake up and grab this series right by the horns, and it's going to be a quick one.
I think it really depends on if Carlson's back and if he's 100%.
If we get the same team that we kind of saw in round robin, maybe outside of the Bruins, it's going to be a very, very quick playoff for the Caps. But
I really don't see the Capitals only winning one game in the series either way. I think they just have the straight up skill to be able to win two games against the Islanders, who have less skill as a team than the Capitals. So
I hope so.
Someone promise Ovia another Stanley Cup keg stand, and we can get there.
Him and Oshi.
Yep. We tell them they can party twice as hard if they win, and we got this. All right. Well, good stuff talking about hockey, but now we have to talk about our reigning, defending world champion Washington Nationals. And I say that in a very low tone, because after the Marlins breakout and the games were postponed, the Nats went 1-4. Things are looking good against the Mets. We did win the first game, but then we lost the second game, and then we moved to play the Orioles. And I don't want to say this score because it makes me sad. But I will do it for the good of the pod. They lost 11-0. And then they lost again. And then the Orioles and the Nats took on the ground crew, the Rain Tarp. Just overall, the Nats are 4-7, basically, is kind of what I'm getting at here. And things aren't looking good. So, what are your all's thoughts?
I think it's time to panic a little bit with the Nats. You know, I think this might just be a team that needs some time to really get into the swing of things. It's an older team. You know, I think Doolittle's been having issues. Strasburg just played his first game back and did not look good. I think some of these guys might need more time to really get into the thick of things, but we're in the dog days right now, whether we like it or not. We have a very, very short season. We're already 11 games into what is a 60-game schedule, and they've got to wake up very, very quickly. So I think it's panic time.
I don't know if it's panic time quite yet. Definitely not great, obviously. But there's still, like, they have a couple of nagging injuries that they're still trying to fight, like with Strasburg. Anibal, that was his first start of the season. And
his last start. No, I'm just kidding.
As we cut him and start fitting.
He had two other starts before the Orioles debacle, didn't he?
I think he had one other start, didn't he, in the Blue Jays series?
I think he's had three starts this year.
And he definitely has not had three. I can tell you that.
He's 0-2 this year, but I don't know if there was a third or not. But
he's only been in two games.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. He hasn't looked very good in either of them. And, you know, he started very slow last year, too.
Yeah, so that's what I'm kind of thinking. Strasburg's had that injury, apparently. That's what led to the 5-run inning. He gave up against the Orioles yesterday. So hopefully, I think if they're still like this at the 20-game mark, yeah, I think it's probably time to panic. If they're sitting at 8-14, or not 8-14, what would it be? Eight and 14 at the, the 22-game mark. Yeah. I think then it'd be time to panic. But for now, I think there's some things that they could work out, work around some injuries. Trey Turner's got to start hitting. He's been abysmal. Mm-hmm. But other than that, like, I think things will click into place eventually, because most of the bats have not been doing badly, namely Soto and Starling Castro as the leaders of that charge.
Yo, Castro has been a dope signing, bro. Castro's been a great signing.
Yeah, even in that 11-0 game, Castro had some hits.
Yeah,
he's been hitting.
I think the pitching will get it together.
He had a homer in the game. What was it? Yesterday or 2 days ago?
Yeah, yesterday. Suspended game.
Yeah, he had a homer first of the year.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think we've got some time, not a lot, but I think we got some time to kind of retool, rethink, and get back into it.
What do you think, Stevie?
I think at least the last five games can be summed up by the grounds crew. but other than that, yeah, I kind of agree with Chris. It's still early. It's 11 games in. I think it's kind of bad that we're losing to our crosstown rival in the Orioles, who didn't have a good season last year. So I think that's tough that we lose that series, but it's still early. I think if the bats click, then the pitching will hold up their end, and then they'll be just
well. As we're recording this, the Nats are playing the Mets, and knock on wood, we're up 1-0 in the top of the second, thanks to a home run from Cabby. So hopefully this is a sign of good things to come for this lineup. I mean, getting Soto back is a huge and necessary injection into the lineup. Just due to his ability to, you know, corral the team together, and also his very dynamic and explosive bat. Starling Castro has been pretty much a godsend signing in terms of just his ability to get the ball out into the outfield. I agree. Turner is not playing like himself. He's not playing like the Trey Turner we all know and love. He's playing like some AAA scrub, and ultimately
a really fast
triple A scrub.
I do want to say something. If you're gonna bring up how badly Trey Turner is hitting, there's somebody else that's hitting about 80 points worse in every category. I'll let you all guess who that is. But he is hitting 118
on the year. Can you not insult Eric Thames like that, bro? Like, that's...
It's not Eric Thames. Eric Thames actually has better in pretty much everything than Trey Turner.
Are you suggesting that our Lord, our Savior, our Messiah, Michael A. Taylor, is playing poorly?
It is Michael A.
Get
Taylor.
Get this man out of here, bro. Oh my God. Whose man's is this?
I thought we were going to continue this bit and just keep on going through the other Nats players. Like, oh my God, you hate Defo?
I was gonna like just start calling out like guys who used to play. Why are you hating on Bonifacio like that?
Oh, that's your stick.
Why are you hating on Jason Wirth? Anyway, basically to sum up kind of what we've been going on, the Nats. I kind of agree with Chris here. I don't think we're in full panic mode yet, but it is definitely worrisome to see this performance out of the team, especially with Sean Doolittle, who was a key part of our bullpen last season. I don't know. There's no injury history with him. It's something's not clicking. Something is not clicking.
Yeah, Doolittle, it is time for panicking. I think he is just not looked himself, hasn't looked good at all. I'm starting to get scared about him.
Yeah, like Tanner Rainey's basically switched places with Doolittle. Like Rainey's been playing super well out of the bullpen. Yeah. Same with Finnegan.
Basically closer. Yeah. It does suck though, because Doolittle has done so much for the Nats organization, and then a lot of fans have already turned on him.
I'm not in the camp of turning on Doolittle. Like, the dude has done a lot for the team, and he deserves his praise. I think it's just, you know, even the best players have bad games, or you know, they hit a slump of some sorts. And I mean, this is Doolittle's slump. He's hit a slump. He hasn't been able to figure it out.
You have a comment about Doolittle?
Sure. You can comment about anyone you want, Rahul.
No, I said Nick.
Oh. Oh, I thought you said you wanted to comment.
I see his way he's trying to talk and then just completely getting washed out.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, I'm used to it.
Got him. All right, Nick. I apologize for cutting you off.
No, you're good. You're good. What was I going to say? I don't even remember. I'm not all that
nice.
I'm not all that worried about Doolittle. I'm worried about Doolittle. I hit the panic on Doolittle a while ago, but in terms of our bullpen, I'm not all that concerned because our bullpen's been holding its own this season for the most part outside of the last couple games here. I think you have to look at I don't know if you put Doolittle on the 10-day injured list. I don't know if you just stop bringing him out. I mean, you kind of have to bring him out to get him those opportunities and those reps to try and get back to where he used to be. But it's got to be in those situations where you're up by a lot or down by a lot. I don't think you can put him in there to be a reliable relief pitcher right now.
Yeah, and especially just adding more cold water to this. When your manager makes a statement, then your GM makes a statement, then your teammates make a statement. It's just like saying that they're not worrying. They're actually like hardcore worrying. Like, this is going to be an issue for like a fan favorite player. And like, he's really got to like figure it out and like play in like those low stress scenarios. And hopefully he can come back to
form. So social media definitely isn't helping. Cause I mean, social media is a toxic cesspool. I think everyone knows this, and
please like and subscribe to our podcast.
Yeah, of course. Except us, we are not toxic.
We are the in the session.
But you know, like you said, Chris, people turning on Doolittle already. Just I don't know, like if anyone has like the extreme viewpoint of oh, we should trade him, get rid of him, cut him. It's just like I'm sure that's not waning well on his like mental health, and the mental health is just as important as the physical health. And I really hope that, you know, with Doolittle being, he's pretty much now disconnected from social media. I hope that like that time away allows him to kind of regroup mentally and kind of get back to where he was last season. And, you know, by having less of those distractions, he's able to focus more on improving his game. So Doolittle, you do have five supporters here rooting for you. I know you're not listening, but I'm gonna say it anyway.
Never know. Doolittle would be the type of guy, though, to be honest.
Yo, imagine if we got Doolittle as a guest. That'd be crazy.
That would be insane. Sorry, like, Stevie.
I really suck. All right, Doolittle, what do you think about the Washington football team?
Anyway, I want to close things out, talk a little bit about what's going on around the league, specifically with former Nats manager Dusty Baker. And for those of you that don't know, he is currently the manager of the Houston Astros. And there was an interesting time against the Athletics the other day. There was a fight, and it was not incited.
And the sun rose.
And the fight was not started by a player, surprisingly enough. It was started by the Astros hitting coach, Alex Cintron. I don't even want to pronounce his name right, all right? He's on the Astros. Good luck, Dusty. I don't know what to say here, because
the fun part about that was Dusty Baker was actually ejected.
Yeah, he was ejected because he was arguing a pitch that he thought was a strike. And the guy just did, I was laughing. He's like, he was just like, that's a strike, and then the umpire's like, get out of here. So yeah, so I mean, hopefully, you know, good stuff comes from that,
isn't it? Like, I thought Dusty Baker, like, once it was talked about that he would be the managing the Astros, and like they really needed a more calming influence and like a professional who's been there, I thought it would be like a better team, at least like mentally, like despite all of the hijinks of the offseason, but they really haven't gotten it together, and like all their stars are like playing poorly defensively, and it's just like real bad there, and they've benefited from a weaker schedule according to their standings, but still it's just like they could be I thought they would be in a better shape than right now, just based on what Dusty Baker has been able to do with hotheads. What do you think, Stevie?
Well, at least in terms of back to the brawl, I'm surprised that Astros hitting coach is getting all the blame, because it was the pitcher that ended up hitting the player in the back and kind of started the whole thing. But yes,
this guy had been hit like three times in the two-game series or something like that. So he was pissed.
So is that why the pitching coach is taking some blame for this?
The hitting coach?
Oh, the hitting coach. Sorry.
The hitting coach started yelling.
And waved at him to come on and step out of the dugout.
I didn't see that.
Essentially how it happened, it was like the batter was not pleased with getting hit three times in two games, twice by the same pitcher. He was getting hit by breaking balls, so he was kind of, you know, giving the pitchers some quote-unquote tips on how to pitch. Pitcher wasn't too pleased about that, but it wasn't going to break out into a brawl until the hitting coach obviously egged him on, and apparently he said something that was like really, really bad. That part hasn't come out yet, but apparently everybody could hear it, and it made sense that he would have done it. So I don't know.
I'm sure the league was not happy about all those players just roughhousing, getting really close. Instead of what the image of the league currently, they don't want that.
Apparently there's going to be a bunch of lengthy suspensions coming out, according to some sources.
Yep, Joe Kelly's suspended for the season.
He's actually on the IL right now. Anyway.
I know, but Joe Kelly's not going to get blamed on all this. But basically, I agree. So the hitter's name is Ramon Laureano. He was hit by Humberto Castellanos. He's hit by a pitch. And I mean, he was definitely, he looked very pissed, and he was justifiably pissed, but I think he was calming himself down a little bit, and he was like willing to, you know, he just wanted to just take his base, you know, let things go. And then, you know, obviously the hitting coach did not do that. He was like, He was like, yo, I feel like he said something. He might have said something racist. I don't know. You know, allegedly, scandally, I don't know. But if it was as bad as it is, I mean, it probably was extremely personal, and that's what incited a brawl. Why are you signing a brawl during a pandemic, bro? Like, that's... Come on. Yeah.
Well, it's the Astros, so, you know.
If you put your masks on, then you can fight. But if you
don't... fight with the masks on, so at least you're not giving each other the virus. Yeah. True. I mean... I guess overall take away from this entire baseball talk is, you know, I wouldn't say hit the panic button, but, you know, others may see it differently. But I think these next few games are definitely a huge proving ground for the Nats. And hopefully they're able to kind of overcome this slump that they've been and, you know, look like the reigning defending champs that they are.
So speaking about the suspensions, do you think like the commissioner's kind of like losing his mind? Like he feels like unstable.
He will go to bat for every single Astros player and staff member, because that's literally like his response this entire season. He's just like, all right, he's getting roasted for the response due to players getting infected. And threatening to shut down the season if there's more outbreaks, when in reality, like, nothing that he's doing is really helping, like, at all. And, I mean, if you're going to cancel the season, Manfred, cancel the season. I mean, I don't want you to, but, I mean, like, at least, you know, don't do this wishy-washy shit. Like, either stick to your guns or shut up, in my opinion. Which obviously means nothing to Rob Manfred, but, you know, whatever.
Yes, he listens. He's like, ah, shit, Burn, yeah, exactly, called me right out.
I can't believe this guy called me out. I mean, what do y'all think about Manfred's response? Like, do you think it's good? Do you think it's bad? Like, what do y'all think?
I think, I was a bit surprised that the MLB didn't do some sort of bubble season. And I think the reasoning for it was they have an entire season ahead of them versus the NBA, NHL. They just really had playoffs to finish up. So I think it's tougher for the baseball.
There's also a lot more teams in the MLB, and the games go on for a lot
of games. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. So maybe like they have like multiple hub cities or something, because I know at least Toronto had issues getting to play in Toronto. I don't know. Maybe they could have, in hindsight, done it differently to potentially reduce the cases, but I think it's just part of having the league. It's going to happen, so...
Yeah, I think it would have been really hard to have host cities, because you would have had to have like, I don't know, probably 8 or so at the very least.
I didn't think
games are really long. You are right.
Yeah, and I think baseball just didn't have the time to prepare for that kind of response to set up those cities.
I mean, they could have, but either way, I don't think it would ever would have happened. It would have been a lot more very difficult. In a league with this many teams and a season this long.
Yeah, I don't think anyone was expecting the players to, like, behave this irresponsible. Like, the Marlins, like, bringing families and just going out and, like, you know, what's happening with the Cardinals and, like, other stuff like that. Just, like, players endangering other players and, like, the sport that they're playing in.
Well, and we're seeing, like, players like Zach Plesac on the Indians and Mike Clevenger, who went out the other night... while they were in Chicago, and the team sent them home, and they had the quarantine. Now they've both been scratched from starts because they were being stupid. So now they're not going to be playing with the team for a little bit. And that's going to be a detriment to their own team, but the Indians are still making the stride that this shouldn't be happening. So they're setting a pretty good example. Hopefully all the teams follow that example.
Yeah, and hopefully the I mean, obviously, you know, Cardinals are a rival team, but I mean, you want them to play. Like they haven't. It's almost going on 2 weeks that they haven't played. So you know, hopefully the Cardinals can get those negative tests that are needed for them to resume playing, and hopefully the MLB and players in general can learn to, you know, not do what the Marlins have done and go out and things like that. I mean, it's tough. I think all of us would love to be, you know, love to be able to go out on the weekends now, but you know, we're in a different reality and it sucks, but whatever.
Speaking of going off a little bit. Speaking of our man Trey Turner needing to step up a little bit, he just hit a 2-run home run.
Hey,
putting the Nats up 3-0.
Live update.
Trey was listening to the podcast while he had a headphone in his ear.
Careful, we don't want to indict the Nets cheating again, or at all.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. I didn't think about that. Bro, Nats don't cheat. Only Astros cheat. All right. Anyway, and the Red Sox and the Red Sox. But you know who's saying? Who's counting? Let's move on. And Frank, do we even want to talk about basketball? Because I mean,
it's funny because we started off on a high note, then we went to a middle note. It's like, Nationals aren't playing well. Now we just have like,
let's
the bottom of the barrel here.
All right, well,
well, the next team is going to be the bottom of the barrel.
Let's at least briefly talk about it for the sake of principle. The Wizards were playoff contenders. Now they're no longer playoff contenders because they're out of the playoffs. They
very loosely playoff contenders. Very loosely.
They
it's like where you misspell playoffs, like playoffs.
They went 0-6. They're 0-6 in the bubble. They lost to the Thunder yesterday, 103-121. Had an up and down performance from Hachimura. I think he's still trying to work things out, get it together. But you know, I see him emerging as a focal point of our team, and it's just it's similar to Doolittle. Like, he just hasn't been able to hit his stride. Isaac Bongo, I'm going to say Bongo. He can be the starting center. But I mean, the Wizards, they have a 24-46 record, man. Like, you want to give the Wizards the benefit of the doubt that, you know, unlike another DC sports team we have yet to discuss, they are actively trying to rebuild, but it's coming along very slowly, and it's coming at the expense of things like our three-point shooting.
And what really sucks is that you expected some of the like rookies or like new players to step up, and no one really has. You see Bonga stepping up and Bryant stepping up, but that's about it. Like, you expected like Schofield to make some strides. He hasn't really anyone on the roster, and it's just like Rui Hachimura playing through injury and just playing slower than he usually does and shooting awfully at three-point. And by the way, the Wizards are one of the worst at shooting 3 points in the NBA, and it's going to be interesting seeing this team going forward with Wall, Beal, and Hachimura, and like Bonga, because we need to like either shoot high in the draft and score and win, because none of the players that we have right now are able to consist of that championship winning team.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully, you know, after the bubble and going into next season, the Wizards are able to, you know, try to get a good draft up and then get some good picks, as well as basically rebuild the team. You know, we'll have John Wall and Bradley Beal back by then. And, you know, hopefully the Wizards are able to essentially create a fire from over smoked ashes or something like that, of that nature.
Yeah, Rahul, I do agree, though. I feel like Washington isn't just like a hot city that players want to play in. And I just feel like in the big picture of things, this is the era of pile-on teams where you've got LeBron. Like, the Lakers currently have a 5-man starting lineup. I don't think anybody was on that team last year. Unfortunately for the Wizards, they're not that team that these players want to go to. So we might have to just get really lucky with the draft. I know Rui's a start, but he kind of looks more like a role player to me. But at least for the playoff situation, we didn't have Beal or Wall, so, or not even Bertans either. So
yeah, contract extension, all out.
Yeah, wasn't even much, or, you know, much to play for, I think.
Nick, do you have anything to say about the Wizards?
Nothing to add. I think y'all.
All right.
Nick is like, they should rename them back to the Bullets, and therefore they'll get some edge again.
That would probably work.
On the bright side, because the Capitals were eliminated from the playoffs, they do have a chance of getting that number one the pick Capitals? In the lottery.
I hope the Capitals.
The Wizards.
The Wizards are going knock on wood right now.
The Wizards.
Sitting into the future, it's like, better, oh shit.
You better go punch some wood right now, Chris. Oh my.
Punch some wood. I don't want to.
Don't punch it with like full force. Just like, you know, give it a firm tap.
Like a old chap punch, like a girlfriend punch.
Oh, look at that. Look at that segue. Look at that very.
This is a very violent.
Look at that extremely tasteless segue.
Oh, that's not what I meant. I meant like your girlfriend, like playfully punching you. Gets your mind out of the gutter.
There's nothing playful about this segment as we go
you're really pushing this one home, aren't
taking
you?
Taking it all the way to the sheriff's office. To open things up with football.
Groan.
It's always something new with this team, isn't it?
With the Washington insert team name here. Darius Geis was released by the team after facing domestic violence charges. I'm not gonna get into the report because it's pretty gruesome. But basically, he turned himself into the Loudoun County Sheriff's Office, and Ron Rivera is not having it. They cut him, which is a good thing. You want to establish that culture early on that you're not gonna deal with any of this bullshit. You want a disciplined team from the get-go. Nick, Rahul, I'm going to lean on you guys since you guys are the experts. Also Stevie as well to provide input. How's the team feeling about this release? Like, what does this mean for guys like Bryce Love? Where does the team go from here?
Nick?
I want to hear from Stevie first real quick just because I've known him for a long time as a fan of this team, and I'm curious what he's got to say about just this offseason, like your 32nd, you know, what's happened this offseason and you know, and then maybe some talk.
Okay. Well,
I want to hear what you have.
The 32nd spiel would be Rivera got thrown into an absolute mess. Hopefully, you know, things change, but this is just kind of like a mouse on a wheel. Like, we keep saying the same things over and over again. He's just the new face. But I do think with a completely brand new team name coming in the future, we've got rid of Bruce Allen. I do think the team may be going in the right direction. And this is a 100% Ron Rivera move to get rid of Geis, who I believe Geis was kind of a Jay Gruden guy. You know, they're big partiers and all that sort of stuff. So I think it was actually the right move because Geis was only available for 5 out of the 32 games. Got surgery, I believe, in both knees. So from a durability standpoint, we're not missing anything with him leaving. It's really sad for the player, Darius Geis, but for the team, I don't think we'll notice like an impact negatively.
So I totally agree with everything you just said, and Rahul knows this. I've been not a fan of Darius Geis. I think that he's been hyped a little bit too much, and we have not seen.
I actually have a story. Well, not a story, but I saw Darius Geis at Bar Louie.
I saw him there once too.
Yeah, I saw him there like 2 days after he got put on IR. He's like, and he wasn't like going crazy or anything, but it was just interesting. Like, I think at the time the Skins just. Or the football team put him on IR just to, you know, the season was already over, so they'll just make sure he stays healthy for the following year. But
this was back in like November, December.
Yeah, actually, it was a Monday night. I was watching Monday Night Football, and Darius Geis is also watching the game. It was like, I believe it was Ravens versus Jets, whatever day that was. So.
I saw him there right after he got drafted, maybe like 3 or 4 months after he got drafted. And, he was there with Jay Gruden's son a couple times through my internship there. And yeah, I never said anything to him. You know, they were just chilling. But what was ironic is that Jay Gruden's son like got arrested there not too long after that.
Yeah, he got arrested outside World of Beer, actually.
They had some issues. few of the people in that organization have had issues at Bar Louie and just in One Loud and in general.
Yeah, you're right about that. Yeah.
But yeah, you know, just to wrap up my thoughts on this, you know, the whole thing sucks. It's another bad story about the team. I think Geis, you know, like all the personal feelings of him aside, he seemed like a good guy and a guy that had some really tough circumstances early in his life and early in his NFL career and was trying to bounce back from them. But, you know, dude, like just a handful of awful, awful decisions what it sounds like with the charges that were filed and, you know, you're gone from the team. And I actually think that this is almost like a glimmer of hope for me, just the fact that they reacted so quickly and were like, okay, we're not tolerating any of this, you're gone.
Well,
I think there's actually a little bit of hope there.
To that point, Geis, they actually heard about his charges from Geis himself, and then they reacted quickly once the charges became official. Like, they heard of what Geis did, and they're like, all right, stay away from the team. Before. Don't interrupt. Like, don't come to, don't show your face around this facility. And then the charges dropped, and they're like, all right, we can't have you here. And they just cut him go. And with Darius Geis, I just want to expand on what Stevie was mentioning about him being Gruden's guy. It's kind of interesting because last season when Jay Gruden was the Redskins, not Washington football team at that point in time, head coach, he actually started Darius Geis over Adrian Peterson. And that was kind of a big thing among the media and also the locker room that Adrian Peterson was sitting down while Darius Geis was supposed to take over and then he blew out. Just got injured and had to be benched until the Panthers game, basically. So with that, it's kind of like I'm glad that they reacted in the manner and the way they did. And we're going to have some differences in the RB room, who's going to get touches, who's now suddenly a lock for the roster, who has a chance again. And it's a good message to go forward. I find it concerning that Cody Latimer, who also had some controversy over this offseason, wasn't released. But I understand that there's probably more extenuating circumstances regarding Latimer that the team's not fully aware of, or they might be on his side a little bit more. Who knows? And also just our wide receiver group is very thin. And if we lost Cody Latimer, who's really going to be a death piece going forward, it's going to suck. Because we really don't have anyone there, as we mentioned in our last pod. And just speaking about the running back room, I think Payne Barber has a chance now to make it. And I was thinking he was just going to be a practice squad body. Now, I don't think he's going to amount to much, and he's going to have very limited snaps as like he and Adrian Peterson fulfill the same role. And AP has been durable his whole career pretty much, except for that 1 year. And so, but he has that shot to like kind of prove himself for a bigger contract the following year. And with that, just kind of talking about the other running backs that we have, Adrian Peterson's going to be Adrian Peterson. He's going to be the main guy. He's going to get the first snap out of the season, or first running snap of the season, obviously. Gibson is going to be the X factor and play as kind of like the new role guy who's a wide receiver running back. And he's going to excel, taking a few limited snaps, like to the house, hopefully, and making some house calls. And then Bryce Love is trying to basically become that main running back and take over Adrian Peterson's role and hopefully be our main running back in the future as well. And J.D. McKissick will make it just as like a slot back, kind of like a worse version of Chris Thompson, a poor man's Chris Thompson, as it were.
I think that speaking football analytics what's gone on with Geis, I think you're going to have the roster be Peterson, Love, Gibson is the X factor, and I think the other guy that's going to make it is Peyton Barber. I don't see McKissick making it. I just don't see it. I think Bryce Love and McKissick are both capable of kind of playing that Chris Thompson scat back type role. And I don't think McKissick has done enough in the league to warrant being a roster lock. Now, maybe in the preseason he goes off and shows something, but my guess is you're going to have just those four guys make it. I don't think McKissick's going to make it. I think this move impacts Bryce Love the most because I think Bryce Love is going to be gunning for that starting running back job. And I think he's going to win it at some point this year. I'm very, very high on him. Before this Geis injury broke out, or not injury, before this Geis thing broke out, I kept saying I wanted to see Bryce Love be the guy that, you know, eventually takes the job because I didn't count on Geis ever playing another snap for us, mostly due to injury concerns. You know, ultimately something unfortunate happened, but, you know, in the process, Geis is no longer playing here. So I think that still holds true. I think Bryce Love is going to be the guy at some point this season.
Yeah, and I think Bryce Love is the fastest running back, not Antonio Gibson, on the roster as well. So he's got that going for him as he tries to usurp Adrian Peterson's role.
Yeah, overall, overall a good, interesting, and basically an interesting battle at running back for the team. But to wrap things up for football, we're going to talk about social media teams, apparently.
This is the hard-hitting stuff coming from the DC Sports Brain Trust. On another note, Juan Soto just hit a 463-foot home run.
You love to see it. Juan Soto, baby. Childish Gambino, let's get it. I'm buying my jersey. I'm buying it.
He hit it over the center field apple at City Field, and that's the longest homer of his career.
Speaking of the Nats, though, their social media team is A+ compared to the rest of what
let me offer some perspective on this.
As the
Rahul really wants to talk about
social media. Nick and Rahul talk about the Redskins social media all the time and how much they are and how much they suck compared to the other teams.
No, what's weird is though that like other like podcasts and media sources that are talking about the Washington football team social media is like overly like complimented of them. It's like, oh my god, there's so much great compared to the old one, and like they're a lot less cringy, but they still make quite a bit of mistakes and just like overall, just like, I just wish you didn't say that kind of moments. And they like, what I've noticed with them and what Nick has been complaining about too, is that they try to overhype like small things and like they play up the span expectations because like just of how our media market works. And like everyone's thinking like the bomb's going to drop when they say, oh, we have something exciting to show. And like it's just like, oh, we're putting numbers on a helmet, or we're gonna have Wale host the draft show. And it's just like, you know where you are, right? Like, this is one of the biggest media market teams that there is, and our social media just like doesn't act up to that. And they are better than our previous one in terms of like what they've been able to produce, but I think they still have quite a bit to go. What say you, Nick?
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that, I mean, for starters, they brought in, I think, completely new individuals to run the accounts this offseason. Because last year it was just, you know, nothing special. Let's ruffle your feathers and then get absolutely demolished by all the bird teams so they can, you know, bring that back up to show later on. You know, it was just nothing special, and they couldn't really highlight anything because it was nothing but loss after loss after loss. And this team was a lot more interactive with the fans, you know, starting out in the off season. But, you know, they've had some missteps. I think that what have been the missteps? You know, I think the one that pissed me off the most was we have a big announcement. And then they sat on it for a couple days, and it turned out the big announcement was that Wale was hosting the draft party. I'm like, you know, that's cool. I like Wale, but, you know, you have to know that your fan base is starving for any sort of good thing to come out of this team. The remaining fans of the team. And it's just like, you know, why do that, you know?
Yeah, and I'm like, I'm kind of too down on them, but they do have a really tough job just in – like comparison with other social media teams, just because of the garbage fire that the Washington football team has been on and off the field.
And so And technically, you know, those people are managed by Larry Michael, were managed by Larry Michael for all these years, you know, who was the North Korean lady of propaganda, you know, let's talk about only great things and skin tangibles. And then the whole Post story came out and he was involved and he was implicated in the accusations by being a, you know, very, very creepy and toward women in the workplace. And none of that is really all that shocking to me, but it's also like, dude, yeah, I would not want to be managed by that guy.
To give kind of an overview on my perspective on it, and this is just a quick thing since we are over time. Their Instagram, I think, is fine. I think their Instagram is pretty bare bones for a sports team. I mean, they highlight the players, they show footage of practices, they show footage of players making plays, and, you know, they do what they got to do when it comes to, like, honoring players. Like, they had a happy birthday post for Doug Williams yesterday. They had the statement on Geis, which is, you know, pretty much how you got to do it. And when you post it, just minimal captions, no captions. I think it's their Twitter that needs work, truth be told. Whoever's running the Twitter needs to really reevaluate how they're running their Twitter. Because I agree with you, like, these announcements don't really carry much weight. And also, they did a social media 101 error, which was they didn't realize that you can't hashtag numbers. You hashtag phrases. And also, when you're hashtagging your phrases, you have to make sure that, one, no one else is using your phrase, and also, two, that your phrase does not link back to any problematic things. So, hope, you know.
Yeah, and lastly, I'll say, and this isn't really about the social media team, but just about the franchise as a whole, why is it that when you look up Washington football and any position player, you get redirected to Huskies? You don't get actually redirected to the professional football team, which is definitely a mistake and something that they should be addressing.
I mean, like, with Google's algorithm and how search engine optimization works, you have, I mean, Washington, like, it could be Washington State. I understand that it's top of mind, like, it's DC, I get it. But also, you know, with the way that their website may be structured, perhaps Google's algorithm is not properly detecting the right content to be displayed at the top of the page.
I think.
Anyway, Stevie, you want to provide thoughts on social media and marketing for the Washington football team?
I think the only thing I want to mention is the logo. At least that W just looks really bad.
thank God somebody agrees with me.
I mean, what else could they really do? I don't really know. So, but I was thinking about it, and I was looking at the Nats W, and like, that looks amazing. That W looks really cool. And they just completely, it looked like they went into Word Art back in, you know, in Microsoft Word and just did a standard W. But it is what it is. Hopefully they don't keep that when they do release the actual team name. And they completely scratch whatever they're doing now.
I got some crap from some coworkers up in New York that our baseball team is the Washington Walgreens, and I had to put them in their place because it's a because
you just responded Walgreens. With their World Series.
That's literally, well, I mean, they're Yankees fans, so it's like I couldn't like dig on them too hard because they are Yankees fans, but at the same time, I was just like, yo,
their logo is very similar. It's an N and a Y. Ours is just
it's the N and the Y.
The Yankees haven't won a World Series in 10 years. Get out of here.
Hey, man, doesn't stop Yankees fans from saying how good their team is. So anyway, let's go ahead and quickly wrap up, talk really, really quickly about college football. Just some news about what we're seeing here. The Big Ten canceled their season. The Mid-Atlantic Conference also canceled their season. The Big 12 and PAC are considering it. And the SEC and ACC are unaffected so far. Not looking good for college football.
Well, I don't think.
I'm just going to say JMU's going to win it all.
That's right.
ACC and
that's SEC. Right.
They canceled they already canceled their fall season, Chief.
Oh, shit. I didn't catch up on that.
That's,
yeah, nobody wanted. Apparently, nobody wanted to play them.
Because we're too good. Sense. Yeah, and also North Dakota State sucks. All right. Thank you guys for listening to the DC Sports Brain Trust. Stevie, thanks for coming on. Appreciate your perspective on these things. Hope you had a fun time talking with us.
Yeah, it was great. Thanks for having me, guys.
Joined as always by my three good friends and best damn sportscasters around, Chris, Nick, and Rahul. My name is Varun. I've been your host and moderator. Like and follow our social media. Wow.
This man is about to say subscribe.
We may or may not be better than Washington football team social media.
Make sure you ring that bell.
Like, share, subscribe to my Twitch channel. Like our page on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter. We'll have the links to those in the description of the episode. Thank you guys for listening. Here's to DC Sports, and hope to see you all next week.